Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you this morning. Well, the Violence Against Women Act is up for reauthorization this year. This is the federal law that sends grants to cities and states for violence prevention, shelters, and advocacy. The Senate is debating the law this week. Now, the Violence Against Women Act was signed by President Clinton in 1994, but the rate of domestic violence homicides has remained virtually unchanged in nearly every state in the country ever since. Every state, that is, except one, and that's Maryland, where domestic violence homicides have fallen by 40% since 2007. That's while the rest of the country remains stagnant. Our next guest can claim some of the credit for the astounding drop in domestic violence homicides in Maryland. Jacqueline Campbell is a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. She created something called the Danger Assessment. It's a screen that helps police, advocates, and judges and others determine the likelihood that an abuser will murder their partner. Jacqueline, hello.
Hello.
Also joining us, Susan Miller, CEO of the Rose Brooks Center, a domestic violence shelter in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining us. Jacqueline, let me start with you. The danger assessment that you created, like I said, helps police and others determine when violence will transform to fatal violence. Give us a little bit of an idea of how it works. What do you see in a domestic violence situation that can really tip off police and judges and other people that a bad situation could turn far, far worse?
Well, I developed the danger assessment many years ago, working with abused women and working from my first research, which was on homicide of women, where I found that women were most often killed by a husband or ex-boyfriend, and that domestic violence, violence against that woman, was the main precursor, the main underlying factor with those homicides. Now, the strategy that police are using now in Maryland is called the Lethality Assessment Program, or we call it the LAP for short. And that was based on the danger assessment and developed in conjunction with domestic violence advocates, with police officers, and especially with the help of the Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence and Dave Sargent, who is a former state police officer. And what the police were trying to do is figure out some way to help women understand if they were at high risk for homicide in this domestic violence situation.
Is this primarily
get them in touch with domestic violence services?
Is this primarily a function of sitting down, questioning the victim, getting some insight into what goes on between her and the abuser? What specifically do you ask them? What happens?
The police officer, first responder who comes to a domestic violence scene, asks a series of questions, as I said, based on my danger assessment, that identify high-risk women. So things like, has the abuse been increasing in severity and frequency, particularly has the abuser threatened her with a weapon or threatened to kill her? And those are the kinds of things that we have identified that are particularly associated with an escalation of domestic violence to a homicide or a near-lethal event. Then if the woman screens in at high risk on the LAP, then the police officer, importantly, calls for her the domestic violence services organization rather than just giving her a phone number and expecting her to follow this up. This makes that connection to the domestic violence services, to the advocacy organizations, which is where she can get good safety planning, where she can escape to if she needs to, through which she can get orders of protection or through the criminal justice system, but gets that connection made for her or with her at the time of the event.
Let's hear a little bit about how the danger assessment is functioning on the ground. Susan Miller, CEO of the Rose Brooks Center in Kansas City, which is a domestic violence shelter. You have recently imported the danger assessment to your facility. Is that right?
Yes, actually, we have started the danger assessment back in June of 2009.
All right, fair enough. Give me a little bit of before and after. What was your life like trying to prevent fatal abusive homicides before 2009? What is it like now? How have things changed?
Well, before 2009, we really relied on the victims to call us through a hotline. And we also receive some referrals through hospitals and things like that for those women who are in danger. But since the Lethality Assessment Project, it has been it's an incredible tool for us, really, in saving lives. It's really allowed us to reach more victims in need. What we see is that many of the victims that are calling us and responding to us through the Lethality Assessment never knew about the resources that were available to them. And in addition to that, when the police officer goes through these questions and asks her whether or not he has choked her and so on and so forth, she realizes that this is the first time that she really is in danger and that she needs to reach out for help.
Susan Miller, you mentioned the police officers, and I want to play a clip here. Let me set it up. This comes from, you're about to hear from Nassau County Presiding Police Officer Peter Schmidt, that's in New York, speaking about the case of Joanna Bird, who was murdered by her husband after what Schmidt considers to be a series of missteps by Nassau County Police. This is from February 7th, 2012. Listen.
There are 22 police officers in this county who were mentioned who ought to be ashamed to look at themselves in the mirror every morning when they get up to shave, much less be wearing the badge. Orders of protection were ignored. People were mandatory arrests were called for and not performed. Given a cell phone to the prisoner when he was in behind bars and allowed him to call the victim 35, 40 times and just on and on and on.
Susan Miller in Kansas City, has having the danger assessment changed the attitude of police? Does it change?
Oh, absolutely.
It has how?
Absolutely. The police really now have a better understanding about why the women, the victims, do not leave, because it all has to do with the fact that she's afraid she's going to be killed. So it also just provides them a way to feel like they are a part of the solution. Prior to that, as Dr. Campbell mentioned, they may provide the victim with a phone number to call, but now they can really engage that woman into services and feel like they are really helping to make a difference. And the partnership that we have developed, we had a good relationship with our police before, but the partnership now that we have developed is really greatly enhanced. I mean, every day we are talking to these officers and working together to try and be able to get these women into services, because we know that if we can, we can save their life.
Jacqueline Campbell, I mentioned in the intro that Maryland is the only state in the country since the Violence Against Women Act was first signed in the 90s by Bill Clinton, the only state in the country where domestic violence homicides have dropped. And congratulations to Maryland and congratulations to you, but why has not this program, to the extent that it gets credit for the drop, why has not it been exported to more jurisdictions, to more states? How can it be that Maryland is doing so well and it's the only state in the country?
Well, I don't think that we can directly attribute the drop. I mean, we think it has something to do with it. We think that these partnerships between police departments and domestic violence advocacy organizations that have been strengthened by the LAP process, we think that also has to do with it. You have to be careful about saying there's cause and effect.
Sure,
there.
Of course. And yet it's one state in a sea of 50, and if 10 states were doing better, you'd say okay, but one state is doing better.
Yeah, and other states have been doing marginally better and then back up again, and there's oftentimes year-to-year fluctuations.
Sure.
We think partly it's because it's throughout the state of Maryland. And we see other states now moving, as was just talked about, to this kind of statewide spread of use of the LAP or some other strategies around risk assessment, making sure that women are getting a realistic appraisal of how much danger there is in the relationship. That's hard for people to see for themselves. And also, as I mentioned, that close collaboration with the domestic violence services organizations, which are in peril if VAWA is not passed.
Well, the Senate is debating the Violence Against Women Act this week. It will go to the House, and we'll see if Congress reaches an agreement. But Maryland has had uncommon success against the problem of domestic violence, fatal attacks. Jacqueline Campbell is a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, creator of the Danger Assessment. We were also joined by Susan Miller, CEO of the Rose Brooks Center, a domestic violence shelter in Kansas City. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We've been talking earlier this hour about presidential also-rans. John Edwards is on trial. We talked about Newt Gingrich as well. And we wanted your remembrances of the campaign. Here's one listener's impression.
I'm no fan of John Edwards, but why wasn't it mentioned that Newt Gingrich handed divorce papers while she was dying of cancer?
Well, Dana, I think you just mentioned it. So there you go. Another bit of Newt Gingrich's legacy there. 8778-MY-TAKE. You can always post to the website at thetakeaway.org. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John and Celeste. This is The Takeaway.